Hello, and welcome to our monthly Lunch and Leadership Conference call. This is Susie, and I just wanted to let you know that all callers are currently muted, but if you have a question at any time, please feel free to press star 7, or if you're joining us online or would like to, the link to ask a question is on our homepage, scarletleadership.com. Thank you again for joining us when we have our question and answer option. For now, here's Joe Scarlett.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another one of our educational conference calls, and the topic today is all about culture. Just by review of our programs, our next signature executive program kicks off on February 21st, and we still have a number of slots open, so if you're interested, please sign up or speak to your HR executive and get signed up for the program. It's an 18-day, very intense program in executive development geared toward those of you that are on a fast track to higher levels in your company. We also, coincidentally today, happen to have an emerging leader program going on here, which is for those who are in leadership roles early on in their careers. And today we happen to have with us Mimi Bliss, who is working on public speaking and presentation skills. And that coincides with what we're going to do on our next conference call on January 17th. Mimi Bliss is going to join us, and we're going to talk about presentation skills, those things that are so very important for us as we're speaking with the people that work for us and speaking with those that we work for. So with that, we want to, again, welcome you to the call, and I'd like to turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink.
Thank you, Joe. We have with us today Chris Licurdo, who is with the Ramsey Group. And, Chris, I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about yourself. Just tell us a little bit about you.
Well, for over 10 years, I've been an entrepreneur, run my own business. But I've been teaching people for many, many years on running a business, growing a business, leadership, leadership insight. And I teach that all across the country in events that we do here locally in Nashville. And every day I teach that as well through chrislicurdo.com.
Excellent. So you know a little bit about culture?
I know a little bit. Yes, I do. I know a lot. I know enough to be dangerous. How about that?
Okay. Well, then be dangerous with it.
Okay.
We're going to start off with, you know, so what about culture? We hear so much about it. We talk about it. We talk about developing culture and all the things that happen in an organization. But what's the big deal? Why does it matter?
Well, if you're asking Chris Licurdo what culture is, I'm going to say simply actions and attitudes. It's the actions and attitudes of the people, of the organization, everything that you do. Now, why is that important? Well, if you've ever worked, and I'm pretty sure all of us have worked in a place where we did not like the culture, it's because it had bad actions, it had bad attitudes. So for me, when you're looking at does culture matter in your business? Absolutely it matters. It defines who you are to the public. It defines who you are to each team member. If they see great culture, if they see great actions and attitudes, then they believe this is a great company. If they see the opposite, then they believe that as well. So for me, when it comes to running a business, your culture is one of the most important things that you can possibly do.
It has a huge impact on brand, and it can make you or break you, really.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking before the call started about a situation that we both have experienced at Vanderbilt Hospital here in Nashville, and how the culture there has made such a huge difference with families that are going through traumatic situations or illnesses with their family members. I have one, and he has one, and in both cases, the culture there was so supportive, not only of the patient and of the family, but of the visitors to the family, that they made the experience much better than it would have been otherwise.
Absolutely. I have become a Vandy fan. Now, maybe not for the football team, but I have become a big Vandy fan. I have gone through two traumatic brain injury, not me personally, otherwise you're like, wow, this guy's doing really good. I've had two people in my family that have gone through traumatic brain injuries. One, literally 2 years ago, was at one hospital. As we went through this, it was obviously a traumatic time for us as well, very difficult. It was also very difficult to work with some of the staff. It was difficult to work with some of the doctors. The culture there basically said to us, it screamed to us, we really don't want you in here, but we have to let you in here. We really don't want you to be in here. You know, if we could have it our way, you wouldn't even be in here with your loved one.
We just take your money.
We just take your money and wait for your loved one to pass on. That's really what it screamed to us. going to Vanderbilt and going through pretty much almost the same exact situation, the very first thing that we noticed was how much they wanted to take care of the family. Mm-hmm. They thought about the family. We had one of the greatest neurovascular surgeons on the planet, Dr. Marco, who took care of my stepdaughter. She had a ruptured brain aneurysm. And he was calling me. This is a guy who, I'm a busy man. Joe's a busy man. We're busy people. You guys here are busy people. This guy is busy. I mean, he does nothing but sit and take care of brain surgeries all day and all night long, every day. And he was taking out time to talk to me on the phone, tell me what was going on, all of that. As she got moved from the surgery into the critical care unit, there was a nurse that came out and said, I just want to make sure that you guys actually know what's going on. From that point on, we were allowed to have people back there. Now, they still wanted to make sure that it didn't get crazy, but the culture screamed, not only are we caring about your loved one, we're absolutely concerned about you, the family.
What a great thing to say about any organization, really.
Culture is a differentiator between brands, and this is a perfect example of where a great culture bonds you to an organization, and a bad culture will chase you away. And wherever you are in any organization, both the company culture and the culture in your operating unit can make all the difference in the world. It's a very interesting dichotomy between good cultures and bad cultures. I was this morning chatting with a fellow from Austin, Texas, and he was talking to me about Tractor Supply, as you might expect, and he said, you know, when I go in that store, I just know they have a sense of integrity.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know exactly how he determined that, but that is, in fact, the culture, and it came through to a customer, and you wouldn't necessarily think it would. So always think of culture as a differentiator, both with your people and with your customer base.
It is an intangible. I think you can't put your hands on it. You can't bring it in the morning and take it out with you in the afternoon. But it is not unintentional, and it doesn't happen by chance.
Not at all.
It's very intentional, and Joe, you know a little bit about that.
Well, leadership creates the culture, and I mean, there's a culture in every organization. If leadership doesn't create it, it comes from the bottom up, and that's typically not particularly good. Culture coming from the leadership is the way you really want things to happen, and at Tractor Supply, we were very intentional about that and very consistent about it, always talking about our mission and our values and carrying cards around in our pocket and handing them out to people and being proud of everything we do in terms of the culture, building the culture in a company and staying focused on a few key topics.
One of the things I teach is exactly that. You have to force culture. When I'm teaching business leaders, when I'm teaching owners, the thing that they don't understand is they think culture is something that's great to have. They don't understand that if they don't force it, it's going to be forced upon them. Just like you said, Joe, either you are going to set the culture in your company, or I promise you somebody is going to come in and they're going to bring in bad culture. They're going to bring in culture from the last company or last 10 companies they've had. They're going to bring that into your business, and they're going to set that culture for you, and then you're going to spend a lot of time fighting to actually try to fix that. And on the Tractor Supply side, I'm going to say, because I am a customer, I have always loved when I go in there, you do feel integrity because of the way that you're treated in the process. People are more concerned about taking care of you than taking your dollar, and that has been one of the things that has really you know, as we've grown in a relationship and speaking and doing interviews and all that, that is one of the things that has stood out to me the most.
When you're in a leadership role, it's about the behavior you model that people watch, and if you model the behavior you want, people will follow in that mode. We always went into stores, we would always be listening to people and listening carefully and never shooting that messenger. And when you model that kind of listening behavior, other people begin to listen. Other people tend to follow what you do. It's interesting to watch leaders and how they create or don't create culture, and it's the leaders who lock themselves in a corner office that don't create a culture, and it just evolves around them, whereas leaders who are active and engaged in the business, who are out there talking and listening and paying attention, are the ones that first understand the business and then are able to create that culture by talking about what's important. At our sales meetings, I would always talk about the same kinds of things, or at least part of my talk would always be about our mission and about our values. And some of the old-timers would say to me before I got up on stage, they say, Joe, what are you going to do, talk about what you always talk about? And I look at them, I say, you're damn right I do. Because it's so important to be consistent about those few things that are really important to you. That's how you build a culture. Talk about your mission, and our mission is to work hard, have fun, and make money. Talk about your values, and in our case, it always starts with ethics at the top of the list.
Absolutely. I also want to say, Joe, you and I have worked with some, well, everybody here has worked with so many leaders. One of the things that I see happening, which is a cultural thing, and it also becomes a leadership issue, is that if we work in a place that has bad leadership, if we work in a place where the leaders aren't involved, they aren't engaged, they're not intentionally setting a good culture, then what tends to happen is we get a leader who is afraid. We get a leader who is not going to hire people better than themselves. We get a leader who has a tendency to, when things go wrong, the stress that mounts because they don't understand how to set the culture, they don't understand how to make people successful, the stress that mounts causes a leader to work from fear, work from anger, rip people's heads off. That is one thing that I have noticed, that if you are that type of a leader, when you're working with that kind of a leader, if you are that type of a leader, you then create that culture inside your business. You're creating a couple of kind of cultures. You're creating one of fear because people don't – they're afraid to do anything because if they do something and they do it wrong, they're afraid they're going to get their heads ripped off. You create a culture where nobody wants to take any risks, and in leadership that's a terrible thing to have because they're afraid if they take the risks, there's going to be a problem. You create a culture that has no ownership whatsoever. I don't want to own anything. All I want to do is collect my paycheck from my job and leave at the end of the day. And because of that, what you end up getting, all of that adds up to a person who's going to come and work about 50% of their capacity in your business. Now you have set a culture because of bad leadership before you, because of bad culture before you. Now what you've created is you've taken the great opportunities off of the table, and what you've put out there is a workforce that works half as hard, takes no ownership, and cannot wait to get out the door at 5 o'clock.
And is, as a friend of mine describes it, trading time for money.
Trading time for money,
just
absolutely.
Trading time for money. And that brings me to another advantage, I think, of culture, and that is recruiting and retention of good employees, being the employer of choice. We had an instructor here yesterday who was talking about, with the baby boomers, finally, with the economy improving, beginning to get out of the way a little bit, that we are going to experience the biggest employee shortage that we have seen ever in this country.
Gosh.
And so don't you want to be the company that gets the good ones?
Mm.
Don't you want to be the company that keeps the good ones? And that is such a big piece of it. I know from my own experience and probably from everybody else's.
I know in retailing there are certain companies that people want to work for, and there are certain companies people don't want to work for. And I remember in my past life when I worked for a discount store chain in New Jersey, which is no longer in business, but the culture in that company deteriorated while I was there, and it got worse and worse and worse, and people were getting their heads ripped off for doing nothing, and I couldn't wait to get out of there, and as soon as I got a good job offer, I jumped at it.
And the ultimate, you said, they're no longer in business.
That's right. Uh-huh. And they had a great marketing scheme, and they were running Supercent, what amount to Walmart Supercenters 35 years ago, yet they had such a bad culture and such deteriorating leadership that the company went out of business.
Yeah, I think as with the comment of hiring people going forward in the future, there's a couple of things we have to be well aware of. When you have a great culture in your business, people want to work for Tractor Supply because they know you guys treat people well. When you have a great culture in your business, when you take care of team members, when you pay them well, when you treat them with dignity, when you treat them with integrity, when you do all of the things that you're supposed to do in creating a great culture, you change the pool of people you get to hire from, period. You change the pool of people you get to hire. With the future coming up, what we have to understand, since we're all leaders here, what we have to be well aware of is that the future team members, the future hires, especially with the millennials, are more focused on what they can get out of a company than what the company has to offer. There are actually now books being put out teaching people how to get the most out of a company. The reason why, I believe, is because we don't have the companies with the great cultures out there that are showing people, listen, you don't want to work here for 6 months and go somewhere else. We're going to offer you something that is not only great, but it's going to take care of you. You're going to feel great at the end of the day. You're going to have a culture that you can be proud of. And when you do that, you do two things. One, you start to breed champions, because champions want to be in a place where they can get paid well, get a pat on the back, not have to deal with gossip, not have to deal with backstabbing, go home and, you know, be very happy for their day.
And, oh, by the way, work with other champions.
Work with other champions. They want to be, they don't want to be stuck in one spot hiding from the riffraff. They want to be with champions. The other thing you do is you attract champions to your team. It's that important.
And when you have champions on your team, you have less and less personnel turnover, more opportunities for growth. You've got better ideas, more aggressive thoughts coming forward. Now, some of you may work in companies that have mediocre cultures today. That doesn't mean that the unit you're measuring, managing, should have bad culture. You can create within your work group at least a reasonably positive culture, regardless of what's going on around you, and your people will look up to you and respect you for that. And you'll get a better reputation throughout the organization.
Definitely. You got to be focused. People are so concerned with leading is top-down. Leading is not top-down. Leading is a 360-degree issue, opportunity. Let me change it to opportunity. You have the opportunity to create the kind of culture that you want. People are always coming to me, say, or always writing me on the blog saying, what do I do with this negative team member? What do I do with this negative person? What do I do with this negative person? Stop allowing them to be negative. Stop allowing them to be around you. If you're not enjoying what's happening, if you don't like what's happening, then don't allow it to happen. Tell somebody, listen, I don't want this. If you want to do this, go talk to somebody else or go speak to your leader, but I'm not going to be a part of this thing. So where you are sitting, even if you're, like you said, Joe, even if you're working in a place that doesn't have a great culture, you can create a bubble of a great culture around you. It will actually wear off. It'll rub off onto those around you, and you'll start to see that people want to be a part of something bigger than themselves, even if it's only in a small circle.
So everybody has the opportunity, no matter where you are, if you're in a leadership role, you have an opportunity to impact the culture, either positively or negatively. So take the opportunity to impact it in a positive way. There's no downside, and there's nothing but upside. And it's amazing how much people will respect you if you create the kind of culture that's positive and open and encouraging to others.
I want to shift slightly, although we've talked a little bit about the elements of culture. We've talked about it's how we make decisions. We've talked about it how it's how we treat each other. It's how we get things done, and you had some wonderful words, Chris, about that. But it's also how or even whether we celebrate things in the organization. And celebration is such an important piece in any organization, and yet we hear from so many people who say, you know, we really don't do that in our company. We don't have much that we celebrate. We might, you know, finish a big project and everybody have a pat on the back, but even that, sometimes we don't do it enough.
Mm-hmm. No matter what role you're in, it takes no time at all to pat somebody on the back and say, hey, Mary, great job today. Or when somebody does something great, make a big deal out of it. I know when I was in stores, if somebody on the other side of the store had done a great job, I'd holler across the store. I'd say, hey, Charlie, great job. And everybody heard it, and customers love that kind of stuff. Everybody loves it. There's no downside into patting people on the back when they do a good job, so long as you're sincere, and that's very important. And the bigger the accomplishment, the bigger the celebration. And it's not about giving people money. That's irrelevant in the overall scheme of recognition. Recognition's about you personally being recognized. Just think about this. When you're trying to train a dog to do something, you give the dog a treat. Well, you know, don't give up. We're not motivated by food, or maybe some of us are, but
it depends on what you're
motivated by recognition. A pat on the back is to human beings what a food treat is to an animal or a dog. So just keep patting people on the back, and the more you do of it, if somebody does something good, pat them on the back, they'll do it some more. It's not complicated, and it's easy to do, and the bigger the accomplishment, the bigger the celebration. At Tractor Supply, we are continually celebrating success stories. We tell success stories all the time. And when somebody does a great job selling something in a store 1,000 miles away and you celebrate it and pass it around in an email and pat people on the back, everybody wins. Plus, when you tell success stories, other people learn how to achieve that success. It's a win-win. It's leadership in its simplest form. Just, you know, pat people on the back. There's only upside to it.
I do have to say that I've been severely motivated by the bread pudding we had at lunch before we started the conference call. One thing that we have to recognize as leaders, as entrepreneurs, we are great at finding people doing things wrong. We are great at finding people doing things wrong. And again, that is a cultural thing. That's where we come from. We come from a lot of leaders who didn't lead well. They found us doing things wrong, and so that's all we know to do. Like you're saying, Joe, you've got to be finding people doing things right. If you're screaming across the store, and it's so awkward for so many leaders because they've never experienced that before, and the first time you do it, oh, my gosh, there's going to be some mumblings. What is going on? Why did Joe just do that? Man, what happened? Why is he screaming across? Hey, try it. Do it one time. When you start finding people doing things right, then you start putting deposits in their emotional bank. If all you do is take withdrawals, eventually what happens is there's nothing left to take. You have an empty person, and you can't keep taking withdrawals. You've got to put those deposits in their banks. There are going to be times they're going to do something wrong. There are going to be times where you have to reprimand or correct, hopefully guide and direct instead, but you got to start finding people doing things right. On top of all of that, people repeat what they're rewarded for. People will repeat what they're rewarded for. So if somebody is – if you're telling somebody how they did a great job at even just something so simple as showing up on time, if you're telling somebody how they did a great job in sales, if you're telling somebody how they did a great job in whatever it is, keeping in contact with their clients, what you will find is they will continue to do that same thing over and over and over again because they see that they have now pleased you in the process and they're happy about that. So as you're leading your team members, find them doing things right.
I want to go back to one more thing about celebrations, Joe, and I want you to talk a little bit about your annual sales meeting, which I experienced twice and will never forget. I mean, part of the work hard, have fun, make money is have fun.
Mm.
So
at one of our annual sales meetings in Cincinnati back in the 1990s, I was up on stage presenting awards for sales increases and profit increases for the previous year, and all of a sudden I heard this loud noise coming from the back of the room, and this was not applause or people hollering. This was real noise. There were air horns, and some of the managers had gone out somewhere and bought some air horns, and so we had a dilemma. Were we going to tolerate this kind of mischief or not? Well, our immediate reaction was, wow, this is fantastic. And as a result, every year at the annual sales meetings, we have air horns. And it got to the point where one year somebody got an air horn off a Union Pacific diesel.
Oh, my gosh.
Put it in attached to an air compressor. And that nearly deafened a lot of people. But the celebrations like that are just fabulous. There's no downside. And everybody has fun.
Everybody loves to celebrate their birthday.
Yep.
Well, most people love to celebrate their birthday. Everybody loves to celebrate. Everybody loves to go out and say that they've accomplished something. Everybody as a child really loved celebrations. The crazy thing as we become adults is we start to think that's changed for some reason. In leadership, we start to believe that that has changed for some reason. That does not ever change. People love celebrations. People want to celebrate a milestone. People want you to notice. That's why we have so many, hey, happy birthday cards. But do you know what we don't have out there? Hallmark doesn't have a congratulations, you lost 10 pounds card. And the reason why is because people are afraid, well, what if I gain it back? So what if you do? Did you accomplish something? Let's celebrate the accomplishment. But we get this crazy thing of thinking, well, we can't just celebrate everything.
It's all conditional.
Yeah. What if we don't sell as well next month? What if we don't? Who cares?
Take it now.
Celebrate the moment, because if we're able to stop for a minute and celebrate right now and bring in the, you know, Southern Pacific air horns, then guess what? We're going to shoot even harder next month to accomplish better than the same thing.
Did you want to say something about decision making?
Yeah, I remember a number of situations. We were very big on our mission and values, and we had them posted on the walls everywhere. But it wasn't just window dressing. It was part of the culture of the company. And I remember a number of times when we were having meetings and talking about strategies or plans or whatever, often one of the people in the room would turn around and point to the wall and say, wait a minute, is that consistent with our value of this?
Oh,
is that consistent with our value of something else? And sometimes it was, and sometimes it wasn't, but it provoked a discussion about how do we measure up against what we really believe in. And sometimes we'd say, wait a minute, you know, that's a cool idea, but we're not going to do it because it's inconsistent with the values of the company. And all of your decision-making ought to be measured in some way against the culture, against your basic mission, against your basic values in the organization, so that you stay on that same clear path, and everybody who works for you sees that you're staying on that clear path.
I had the opportunity to share when I interviewed you on the Entree Leadership podcast, which was a fabulous episode, which is still people are coming back and talking about how incredible that was. But we talked about the fact that you guys carry your mission and value card. And this is something that I actually posted in up on chrislocurto.com because I loved the power of what you guys use with this. The great thing about this when it comes to decision-making is this becomes your out-of-bound markers.
Right.
Literally everything that comes up, if you will run it through the concept of your mission and your values, you can make a decision whether or not you do it. Hey, that doesn't align with what we're doing. That actually takes us off track. That takes us out of bounds. That puts us in another area where we don't want to be. Instead, if you're putting down, like, the great mission that you guys have, if you're running your decisions through that thought process, then you at least know that you've got guide rails and a guiding value system to say, this is how we do everything that we do. And so I loved being able to share that with my followers.
One question that we have from the audience via the web is that 90% of people do notice what's being done wrong. Is that just natural behavior? Or is that learned behavior, or what do you think, nature, nurture?
I truly believe that is a learned behavior. It's what I call force of habit thinking.
Okay.
What happens is we've come out of a culture that says, always look at what's wrong and try and fix what's wrong. When we spend so much time focusing on what's wrong, what we set up is we set up a culture of people who only look for wrong or try not to do wrong. Instead, what we should be setting up is we should be setting up a culture of finding people doing things right, but also allowing people to make mistakes. We don't encourage them to make mistakes. Here's the thing. Make as many mistakes as you can. Just don't make the same one twice. Because if you're making mistakes, then guess what? You're doing something. You're trying to grow our business. You're trying to make something happen. You're learning. You're researching. And you have the ownership of taking our business to the next level. If I don't allow you to do that, if every time you make a mistake, I come along and go, Mary, what the heck? Look at what happened here. Then what are you going to do? You're going to stop.
You're never going to try that.
You're going to stop taking those risks. So for me, I believe that it's force of habit thinking.
I remember a book I read years ago called If It Ain't Broke, Break It and Make It Better.
There you go.
Which is just that you want people in your organization to be taking chances and moving down the road. And if they screw something up, you know, pat them on the nice job, Charlie. Now let's get it fixed and move on to the next thing. If you're always around criticizing people and trying to find things wrong, you're going to create a negative work environment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
One of the most powerful meetings that I used to have back when I was leading my team and running my business. One of the most powerful meetings I had was I would bring in my leaders in a specific area, and I would ask them, we would do kind of like a overview of an event that we had and how did things go. And what I was looking for when I set this thing up, I was setting it up to say, I want you to pick out the things that went wrong so we can fix it. And I started off the meeting saying, listen, I don't play the blame game. I cannot stand the blame game. This isn't going to be a blame game. This is going to be what did we do wrong? Because we already celebrated the things we'd done right. So that's important to know. We'd already celebrated the right things. What did we do wrong? How do we fix it? It was silent. It took the longest time to get anybody to talk. Eventually, finally, somebody talked and said, well, and pointed at somebody else and said, well, you did this. And then I said, whoa, stop right there. We are not playing a blame game. What went wrong and how do we fix it? It took four meetings for me to finally to get one of the team members to go, all right, I'll tell you what I did wrong. I did this, and I know it affected you over here, and so I've changed my checklist over here to make sure that that doesn't happen in the future, and I'm going to cover this. When I treated that team with dignity and integrity, when they treated each other with dignity and integrity, when we had celebrated the good things, we could talk about the things that needed to be fixed, then instead of it being a bad thing that we had problems, it became a how do we make this more excellent for the things that we're doing going forward. It stopped being about finding things wrong, and it started being about creating better things.
Well, and the relationship is better. It's what Patrick Lencioni calls vulnerability-based trust. I can be vulnerable with you because I know it's okay.
Yes.
And I know I'm not going to be beaten up for it. I know we're going to work through it. So that's really important.
One of the things that I see young managers having trouble with is acknowledging that they've made a mistake.
Yes.
And that's you want to build trust and respect among your people. When you screw up, just stand out there and say, boy, I screwed up. I apologize, and I'll try not to let it happen again, or I'll go fix it, or whatever. But be honest, because everybody knows you screwed up, and if you try to pretend it didn't happen, everybody knows it, so you're just making a fool out of yourself. So
exactly.
When you do something you shouldn't do, just apologize for it. Own up to it right away. Everybody respects you for doing that.
And it's like everything else we do. The first time we do it, it feels so uncomfortable and clunky. But the more you do it, the more comfortable you become with it.
And I think, Joe, you pointed out the most important part of this that people don't get. They don't understand that other people already know that they made the mistake. We think if we don't bring it up, if we don't mention it, that it's going to get swept under the rug and nobody's going to notice. People already know. They will have more respect for you if you talk about it. They have less respect for you if you don't.
So let's talk about, okay, I'm a new employee in your organization. How are you going to instill that culture? How are you going to make sure I understand this is the way we do it here? You know, so many organizations have unwritten rules and sacred cows and things you do and don't do, but you often don't know it until you step in it and get it all over your feet. So if you can, what do you do to indoctrinate new people into your culture?
Well, I know in our stores we would always buddy somebody up with one of the more senior employees in the store, and they'd spend time together and they'd learn about the company. I think we have videotapes in the store that talked about what we did and with, you know, talks from the management and so on. But a lot of it's about practice. What do you really practice?
What they see.
Yeah, what you see speaks so much louder than what you say. So it's what you do. And one of the things that we did at Tractor Supply that I thought was so tremendously powerful, and I say was, we do today, when you're training to become a store manager, you work in a store for 6 months or however long it is, and you go through learning all the mechanical things, but before you can take over a store, you have to come into Nashville or Brentwood now, and you got to spend a week in a class. And the class is primarily about strategies and values and leadership and team building and all those kinds of things. And the classes are taught, a big portion of them are taught by senior executives and some by the HR department, but it's not about procedures or policies. It's about how do you lead people. And it's all about the company. So by the time you leave, after having dinner with the senior executives on Thursday night, by the time you leave on Friday afternoon, whether you're running a store, you know, next door to the office or 1,000 miles away, you can make any decision and never have to look over your shoulder and wonder about what's going on, because you've met every senior executive and you've heard the mission and the values talked about ad nauseum. You just simply understand the company. And that creates a sense of I mean, you have confidence. You have confidence in what you're doing. You don't have to look over, not to look around. You're there running your business.
The thing about what you guys do is you're absolutely intentional. We've said that here in the beginning of this conference call. You guys are being so intentional about making sure that people are indoctrinated with the culture. Same thing, we do the same thing. For us, it is vitally important that we are sharing our culture and our core values in our meetings. We are making sure that whenever we're celebrating something, we mention why we're doing this, why this is important, you know, why we need it. When we're having our team meetings, we want to talk about that we have a no-gossip policy. For us, we have a policy that if you gossip, we'll warn you once. If you do it again, we'll fire you. Plain and simple. The reason why? Gossip is a cancer. It'll destroy your company from the inside out. So for us, that is something we share from time to time. Even you don't have to have anybody gossiping to tell that. You're sharing the core value of the company. We tell people, hey, listen, your mother does not work here, so pick up after yourself. Clean up after yourself. Don't leave stuff, you know, sitting around and, you know, right. Now we've got ants marching through the building. Why is that important? Because what it says to people is, and a lot of us, in today's generation as well, a lot of people aren't getting that, hey, we have guidelines, we have rules, we have things, because if we do it this way, then we get this outcome. We get this kind of culture. So for us, as a new team member is coming on board, they go through a process with our HR team that says, listen, this is our culture. This is what we expect. You're going to have to live up to these standards. You're going to have to read these books. You're not going to gossip. You're not, you know, and as they go through, by the way, we celebrate this. We celebrate this over here. Here's how we take care of customers. One of our, Hurricane Ivan came through in the Gulf, it destroyed one of the churches down there, and it took out a bunch of our product that we had at that church. And they had called up and said, hey, do you mind if we put one of our classes on hold because we don't have any products? The sales team member on that phone call did not go to a leader, did not talk to anybody else. They said, we're going to send you brand new kits to replace those. Didn't have to ask. Didn't have to do anything. They understood we take care of our customer right now. That is the kind of culture that we want. That's the how we want people to handle situations. And so when that actually happened, that church sent in a letter to our HR department and said, I don't know if you know that this happened, but this happened. We get in front of our 330 team members and we scream and applaud and we say, this is how you take care of customers. That is spreading how that culture is. So the new person who's stepping into this, they see that there's a culture of rewards. They see there's a culture of celebration. They see there's a culture of dignity, integrity, and no gossip. They understand,
right.
Now I know how to do this.
That's why they don't have to ask. They've
right.
got it.
They get
They've
to see it.
They absolutely got it. So we've got a culture in an organization. Does it ever change? What are some situations in which you might see a major culture change?
Major culture changes will happen if there's a change in ownership or a change in the senior leadership, or can happen, don't necessarily happen. I'll give you two different views on that. At Tractor Supply, there have been three different CEOs running the company over the last 30 years, Tom Hennessy, Joe Scarlett, and Jim Wright. And everything in the company's changed except the culture. The culture has been very, very consistent over those entire 30 years. So there you have a constant culture, but a huge change in the operations of the company and huge growth, too, from $100 million to $4.5 billion or something like that. And I'll give you an example of another retail company who's been through tremendous cultural change, good, bad, and good again.
And ugly.
Yeah. Home Depot, whom I have tremendous respect for, and matter of fact, Bernie Marcus, who's the founder there, and I go back, we used to work for the same company years ago in New Jersey. He built an absolutely phenomenal organization, and when he was running the company, we would never hire anybody who left Home Depot because nobody worth their salt would ever leave, and if you did find somebody who's coming to apply for a job, they probably were fired for stealing or something like that, so we'd never hire anybody like that. And then Bernie stepped down, and they hired a guy from General Electric called Bob Nardelli to run the company, who promptly unloaded most of the leaders in the company and infuriated everybody, and he did such a good job of chasing people out of the company. Tractor Supply made him our honorary man of the year in 2002 because he saved us so much in recruiting costs. And then he got bounced, and then the fellow that's there today, Frank Blake, although I don't know him, I know about him from talking to people, and he is reinstilling the culture that was there under Bernie Marcus, although Nardelli did a huge amount of damage. So senior leadership can make a big difference in the culture and very quickly, usually in a negative sense.
Right. And while it still has to come from senior leadership, there are some crisis situations that will inspire culture change. And senior leader will just say, this has to change.
One of those examples is the Katrina crisis in New Orleans. And the hospital down there that was run by HCA, their senior executives just went out and they rented helicopters. They didn't ask questions. They went found every helicopter they could get and paid whatever it took to get helicopters in there to get their patients and to get their staff out of that hospital. And every single person came out of there without being hurt at all. And then they went and used the helicopters to get people out of some of the city hospitals, which were not doing anything to get them out. So
by the way, anybody that can get here, we will take care
right.
of you. Exactly right.
And that, by the way, screams and builds even a greater culture.
Mm-hmm.
The culture can change in a positive sense by how you start reaching out even further to help other people.
Exactly.
Culture is about people, literally. It's about people. And we have seen so many times our company every year, multiple times throughout the year, we reach out into the community. We're about changing lives. That's what we do. Our product is not a product. Our product is hope. We teach people how to change their lives. And we will, while that is our main focus, we will also reach out into our community and help others. We'll help others in, especially at Christmas time. We just did our whole company took a whole half day off. Did I just say a whole half day? Can you say that? Took a half day off to go adjust or help out with some different nonprofits in the area to bless families. Every single time we do that, it raises the morale in our team. It raises the morale in our company. It enhances our culture in a way of saying we love people, we love taking care of people.
Great. Thank you. We're going to open up for questions now, and we will
Star 7
if you have a question. And we'd love to hear from you. So what questions do you have?
Okay. There's a prize for whoever asks the first question. I'll double it. Star *7.
Hey, Joe, it's Butch. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Butch.
I read some time ago that it's a good thing if let's say you want to put together a mission statement, you want to get your culture down on paper or something, you know, a rallying point or whatever. I've read that if you involve your people and let them dictate what the values are, what the mission should be, that it'll come out much stronger than if top management just puts it together and says, here, this is what you have to follow. What's your opinion on that?
I have mixed feelings about that. The more engagement you get on the developmental end, the better, because you're going to get more support. But you cannot just give them whatever they want necessarily. You've got to be the guiding light in terms of what culture you expect. You can help. I mean, they can help you craft the words in it and have input into it. But you can't let. It's not a democratic process.
Right.
You have to set some clear goals, and you may want to put in some stretch goals or some things that they might not want. But the more, when you get people engaged, the more people that participate in determining where they're going, the more likely they are to help you get there. So engagement is great, but it's not a democracy.
I know of one company, Joe, that the way they did that was they asked employees to submit stories that demonstrated who they thought the company was, and they got hundreds of responses, and they took all those stories and boiled them down to like 7 or 8 values.
That's a great thing.
Yeah, I think you have to start, before you bring in the rest of the team or even a portion of the team, you have to start with what you believe your core values are. These are things we're not going to budge on. These are things that we believe. These are things that we're going to have in place. If you can start with your core values, the things that you don't want anybody to shake or shape, then you can start to bring in more information and ideas from other team members.
Right.
Okay, Butch, the prize was one beer. The prize was one beer. Now you get 2 beers next time I see you.
All right. It's awesome.
Okay. We have one up here on the screen. Can you speak?
Yes.
Can you speak to the influencing with regards to culture?
Influencing up.
Influencing up. Okay. If I could read, I'd be doing better.
It is a fundamental thing in a company that does not have a great culture. Usually a company that does not have a great culture does not have a strong enough leadership to understand and recognize that the culture is not great. Therefore, if it's going to become a good culture, if it's going to go from a bad to a good culture, it's going to need the influence of people inside that culture. However, you have to understand, for you to influence people on the culture, you have to be able to influence people. In other words, if you cannot influence your leadership, if you cannot influence the team members around you, if you do not have the influence of doing that, you're not going to affect change. You've got to start with you. You have to know that you can be and are influential, and if you are not there yet, then you've got to work in a way to be able to influence people. Whenever I say that, people always ask, well, how do you know? What are you doing to influence change in any area? Not just culture, but are you influencing decisions that are being made in the company? Are you influencing the direction that we're going with product lines? Are you influencing whatever? If you can start to make that happen, you can affect change in the culture.
*7 for questions.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yeah. How would you say your approach changes from a paid staff position to an organization that's all volunteers?
Hmm. Yeah. The funny thing is, when it's a volunteer organization, it should be an actual better cultural aspect, because people are coming to share from the heart. The problem is, you're working with people who you don't see on often. You might spend a few hours with these folks. So what we tend to find is, a lot of times the volunteer organizations have really bad cultures because you have somebody who isn't working with them on a consistent basis. You've got to go back to starting with your core values. One of those core values, because I have worked with volunteers for 16 years, I believe it was, somewhere. It was a long time. I worked for volunteers. The number one core value when it comes to working with volunteers for me is the volunteers are more important than anything else. if you don't understand this, if churches, if organizations don't understand that the volunteer is who gets the ministry done, who gets the work done, then you're completely off base with how your organization operates. So you've got to start there of saying, these aren't people that are just given other time and we're going to treat them as a number. You have got to treat them like gold. You've got to let them know that you appreciate them more than anything. You've got to let them know that they are part of your process, and you've got to let them know that they're doing something that is bigger than themselves. So it is even more important. It's extremely vital. Culture's vital anyways. But especially when you have people who don't get to see it every day, they're showing up and they're going to spend so many hours with you and they're going to learn how your culture is within a few minutes. If they step into your culture and it's bad, they're not going to come back and volunteer. You're going to lose that help. They're going to spread the word. They're going to become instant bloggers talking about how bad your culture is. So it's vitally important to make sure that the thing that you do more than anything is you treat them like gold. If you can do that, then they will also help set your culture with people who aren't even there yet.
Another question, how important are subcultures within a culture?
Subcultures can be very tricky.
Yes,
and when you're in charge, you need to do all you can to stamp out subcultures and do whatever it takes to stop that kind of thing from happening, because it can be detrimental to the organization. If you've got one group going east and another group going west, you're going to have chaos in your organization. So you have to politely but firmly stamp out those kinds of things in whatever way makes the most sense in your organization and your position.
I agree with that, Joe. I have seen subcultures become battle zones, where you had a great culture, a great overarching culture, but all of a sudden these subcultures started to pop up and develop, and unfortunately it became battle zones within a company. So you have your main culture, and that's what you focus on.
And it often comes from disgruntled employees that create this, or sometimes it's a leader below the surface, and sometimes you can just put your arms around that leader and just help them understand what they're doing, and maybe you can. Sometimes you can turn them around into being a supporter as opposed to a disruptor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another question: there's a lot of skepticism around changing negative vibes in organizations, and how do you overcome some of those negative vibes? It's sort of like the culture's here and it's not good, and how are we going to overcome?
The reason why there's skepticism is because they don't believe, they've seen the culture, they've seen the negative vibes, and they don't believe that the leadership's going to do anything about it. I just came back from New York. I was working with a phenomenal company up in New York, incredible profits, incredible people, but there's a lot of skepticism inside that group. And the company literally brought me up to tell the team how bad the leadership has done. They paid me to come up there and beat them up in front of their own company, which was a genius thing to do. It was a smart thing to do. And the reason why is we sat down and I told them, I said, listen, I can come up and teach your company all the things that I teach on leadership, but they're in a place right now where it doesn't matter, because they're not going to believe you. They're going to believe that you're teaching something that's going to last for about 30 minutes, and then it's going to be over with, and everything's going to be back to the old culture. So instead, I got up there, and I stood in front of that company and said, leadership has done a bad job. This company is broken in areas. There's things that they want to fix. They're going to be focusing on fixing this stuff. They are going to go in this direction. You've got one of two choices: jump on this train or jump off. But they are not going to stand around and allow people to continue to degrade this culture when they're trying to fix it. So skepticism can actually be – it's not going to be stomped out in the beginning phases. It can be put on the back burner. People can actually get a little hope and hope that you're going to do it. But more than anything, they have to see results. If they cannot see the results, the skepticism is going to grow, and they're just going to become cynical.
It's action, not talk.
It is.
Star 7, next question, please.
Yes, my name is – there's somebody else there?
Go ahead.
My name is Kim, and this is possibly related to the influencing up question earlier, but in a nonprofit organization, the board's involvement in terms of either setting or changing the culture, have you any experience in that area, and can you comment on what you think an appropriate role for the board is in that, and the executive, by the way?
Well, the board's role in any organization is oversight and helping to set a clear high level direction for the organization, including culture. And that's it's different boards have different involvement levels, but first you don't want a board that's micromanaging. You want it to be setting things at a high level. And most boards they tend to pussyfoot around a lot and not address tough issues. And it may be a question if the board is not providing the right kind of leadership, it may be a matter of just somehow getting to one or two of those board members and let them know that they're not doing the right thing. I'm not sure. Wait, I've never worked in
I have worked with some boards in the nonprofits, and culture has to come from where the energy is. If the board is not the one delivering the energy, and it never really is, then they can't set the culture. They can't act out the culture. They can be a part of bringing ideas. They can be a part of designing the culture. But here's what I've found most of the time in nonprofit boards. Nonprofit boards, people are chosen in hopes of their wisdom. They're chosen in hopes of their knowledge that they can bring to the table. They're very rarely ever chosen because of how great of a culture they've set up in their own business. That's rarely even discussed. So for me, when it comes to a nonprofit, the board is there to make decisions. The board is there to set direction. The board is there to help guide. When it comes to the culture, whoever is bringing the energy, if there is a standout leader who's bringing the energy to the company, that has to be where the culture comes from. Because that's where people get their energy, and that's where they get their culture. If it's coming from somebody that they don't see, that's not, they don't feel, they don't hear, they don't touch, that's not a tangible, figure, then culture will actually start to be set from down below or on the front lines.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Thank you, Kim. There was somebody else on the line also. Next question, *7.
This is Laura. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right. I have started working at a company, and I've been here for about 3 weeks now. And the culture has been one that is very easygoing and laid back, and it's a fun place to work. And, the successes are celebrated, and it's a very positive place. But what they're struggling with now is that people are not working. We've only got about 25% productivity out of the employees. And the CEO has asked me to come in and help change the culture to be one that's still fun and, that people love to come to work, but more professional. What do you suggest? Where do you suggest I start?
Two questions here. One, how's the compensation model set up? Is the compensation model structure set up in a way where people can put their feet up on a desk and still get a paycheck and take care of their family?
Absolutely.
Okay, that needs to change tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm going to say, if you're going to pay me really good money to come and put my feet up on the desk, then I'm going to come and put my feet up on the desk. There's no healthy sense of desperation. Now, I don't want desperate people. I'm saying a healthy sense. So, in other words, I'm going to reward people for doing a great job, maybe with profit sharing, maybe with, a bonus pool of some sort. I'm going to always lean towards the profit sharing. So compensation structure is one thing I'm going to look at. Now, I just said that changes tomorrow. Don't go and change everybody's compensation structure tomorrow. But I'm really, really going to start looking at that. Second thing is people have to understand that they are working for something that is bigger than themselves. If I can feel like I'm coming to work every single day for something that's bigger than me, then I'm going to work hard at that thing. Because it's more than just a job. It's something that I absolutely love. I'm passionate about. I'm crazy about it. I cannot wait to get in there and do that. So if I'm rewarded for doing those things and it's a fantastic thing and I understand that it's bigger than me, I'm going to keep doing it. Myself, I travel a ton. I'm always gone. I'm always teaching. I'm always doing. And the reason why I do that is because I know that I'm affecting change. I know that I'm changing lives. I know that I'm blessing people with this. This, what I do is bigger than myself, and I absolutely love that. So those two things I would immediately look at. The first thing is the compensation structure. The second thing is going to be that people are doing something bigger than themselves.
And I would add to that that there's a pride in what my product is, whether
definitely.
My product is a service or an actual tangible product, that I connect how I feel and how hard I work with that product, and am I helping people?
Mm-hmm.
Golly, you know, there are times when I would come and do it for nothing,
right,
if I'm really helping somebody.
If there's a way to measure productivity, that can go a long way. Just sharing measurements. At Tractor Supply, we had tremendous competition from store to store about who had the biggest sales improvement, who made their sales goal that month, and it creates a sense of pride, a sense of I'm going to work harder because I want to beat Joe Schmo down the road and
healthy competition.
Healthy competition. Mm-hmm. And any way you can measure work and share the measurement with everybody, the more likely you are to get people to be more productive.
And don't be afraid to let people go if they will not work.
Yeah.
If people aren't willing to work, if they're not going to pull their weight, if they're not going to do what they need to do, let them go. I promise you it will set a tone. Don't do it in a mean way. Do it in a way that's beneficial to the company.
And the culture will be even better and more happy and more joyful.
Definitely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Laura. And with that, I think our hour is about up. And we want to thank you, Chris, for being here.
My pleasure.
And thank you all for being on the call. And remember, our next call will be January 17th, and the topic will be presentation skills. Thank you all very much. Have a great holiday and Merry Christmas.
Hey, guys. This is
Merry
Joe
Christmas.
In Kansas City.
I'm sorry?
Hi, this is Joe in Kansas City. And I understand where the culture can change depending on business needs and how you're trying to establish that. But can you give us, say, three or four basic elements of culture that we all could focus on and try to improve?
Very quickly. What are your core values? You got to find out what your core values are. Those are the things that you're going to push as your culture. You've got to have a high morale, so what are you going to do to change your morale? One thing would be cutting gossip, making sure that people feel like they're working in a safe place. You've got to celebrate. You've got to make people happy about what they're doing. You've got to show them that they're doing work that matters, something that's bigger than themselves. If you will focus on those few things, you will instantly change your culture.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Guys.
Bye-bye.